Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Monday, July 6th. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Tim Priester and Drew Mentock of Irish Illustrated. And guys, before we finish off this podcast talking about the U.S. and Belgium in the World Cup, because we know we can get that done, I wanted to circle back a little bit from the news of last week. There was, for the first week in all the summer, Tim Priester, there wasn't a lot of news last week, but there was a quarterback decommit, Trey Tagliaferri, Bergen Catholic, and he has since committed or pledged, I should say, to Oklahoma. QB decommits, not the news it used to be in Notre Dame land.
No, they usually don't come as quickly as that one. That's did true, as well. Yeah. That one, you know, that one, I think that caught everybody in the industry by surprise, 6 days or whatever it was, by Tagliaferri. But like, that's the world we live in now, and Oklahoma up the ante. I do think that it's, you know, there's absolutely no reason to panic with it when you look at years of eligibility left of guys on the roster, guys coming in, and the possibility, and we've talked about this before, Marcus Freeman has talked about this before, the possibility as we get into 2027 of a transfer quarterback if the young quarterbacks aren't ready. So if that were the case, if they were to get a transfer quarterback in 27, losing Trey Tagliaferri means even less than it did. But, you know, you're pretty well stocked with bodies, good players, years of eligibility, just not fully prepared for a guy to decommit after 6 days.
Yeah, we definitely, it came out of nowhere. I mean, we recorded our Tracking the Trail podcast before that, a few hours before that news was announced. And yeah, we definitely had a lot to say about him, so we definitely weren't prepared. But I guess from our perspective and Notre Dame's too, I guess it's better that it happened now instead of 8 months from now, 9 months from now. You don't want another Deuce Knight situation where then you're scrambling and you haven't been keeping up with other prospects and stuff like that. So no, Notre Dame, I mean, this is 2028, so Notre Dame still has plenty of time. And while I do think he's a good prospect, and it is weird, and maybe you don't want to see somebody decommit so quickly, again, it's better for both parties that he made that decision quickly, and now Notre Dame can figure out their next option rather than having to scramble.
So there was a podcast jinx. It just wasn't Irish Illustrated Insider. Yes. Tracking the Trail after it happened. Yeah, honestly, when he pledged in 2028, and I thought, well, there's Champ Mons, Noah Grubbs, and Teddy Girard in between him. We're never going to see him play anyway. That was my first thought, was we will never see him play anyway. And it wasn't, that is not at all about his talent. It's just like, it's way too far away to consider he will ever make it through, because what that means, Mons and Girard and Grubbs, none of them hit.
That's exactly,
you know, right. So there was just really a very limited chance that it would happen. The speed was shot. The speed is the newsworthy aspect of it. It was shock. I was like, wait a minute. It's in a time warp almost. I was like, wait a second. Did he officially commit or what happened?
I mean, hey, Oklahoma got its man. I mean, give him credit.
Yeah,
they were proactive and said, we can't accept this. We're going to offer you this.
Right.
And they got it done.
Yeah. I have no problem with that. And also, Notre Dame probably doesn't mind because they don't have to recoup any money at this point. It went so fast. News today, actually, at least I saw it on news today, Notre Dame unveiling the official first look at the Patrick Kramer dining room. Been a lot of jokes rolling through Irish Illustrated, Tim Priester, all our old comments about how Notre Dame used to eat and the food waste and everything. It was like old home week, seeing some of the names pop up on the Irish Illustrated message board. They will not have to worry about that in the new digs.
I continue to get abused for comments made many years ago about about food waste. I still stand by it. with family in the food industry, but yes, so be it. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating to have an opportunity to see the place. I've said I was promised an August 7th unveiling. I'm not sure that that's actually going to happen. That's about a month from now. But yeah, really looking forward to it. It will be state of the art, along with their practice facility, which everybody has been saying for the last few months. And it really is long overdue. I realize it's an arms race, and you can spend money on facilities forever, year after year, if you choose to do that. But Notre Dame absolutely, positively had to do this, and it was long overdue, and they won't have to address this for quite some time now.
Definitely. And I think sometimes, I mean, we give Lauren Lando a lot of credit. You know, people talk about him a lot, but really your diet and what you're putting in your body to get the benefits from that work is probably more important and more effort for a lot of these guys. I mean, we hear offensive linemen trying to put on weight, where we saw Rodney Dunham and Iwatani put on up to 20 pounds in the spring. Like, that's going to come from that effort, and not that they weren't still didn't have nutrition and ability to do that, but just making that even easier and making it more comfortable for the student athletes to be around in those settings, I think will pay dividends. Because again, that nutrition is what you're going to need to ultimately make those gains in strength and size.
We have almost have news on the field for our countdown, guys. Remember, just a short month and a half ago, we were talking about freshman linemen that weren't going to play for 3 years. But now, the last 10 guys, or last 9 guys, previewed by Irish Illustrated in our annual countdown, the likes of which these names have not been heard. Jagusa, Keeley, Golden, Faremo, Gilbert, Dunham, Greathouse, even Elijah Hughes, who got no play on the message board because they just think that Elijah Hughes is a piece. All these guys are going to decide. They're going to decide Notre Dame's season, Tim Priester and Drew Bentock, because the guys in the top 15 are already going to be good. It's the Jagusa, the Keeleys, Faremo, maybe Gilbert, Dunham, and Greathouse. That is some of the maybe the 10 most important in a row to show up on a countdown here.
Yeah, we have a question in the second segment about wild cards, so we'll get into that a little bit further. But yeah, there are a lot of wild cards, especially in the wide receiver room where yeah. Jordan Faison's established. After that, you know, there's a lot of establishing that mm-hmm. that needs to go on. So yeah, it gets this is where it's a little bit more fun for us to write those up, because now we're not digging for obscure quotes about guys that haven't had an impact or won't have an impact. We're talking about the guys that will determine the outcome of the season. And you know, Jayden, when you say that, Tim, the first guy that comes to mind for me is potentially is a guy like Jayden Greathouse. If Jayden Greathouse can get back on the horse and be the player that he was when he's been really good, which was at the beginning of his freshman year and the end of his sophomore year, absolutely, that will dictate a lot of what Notre Dame can do offensively and who CJ Carr favors in the passing game.
I agree, and too, and a couple of our subscribers noticed it on the message board, but just having guys like Dallas Golden, who played top 100 prospect, who played over 300 snaps as a freshman in 12 games, ranked, I think he was 34th or 35th, like well outside of the starting range, I think also just shows you the depth of this team too. To see guys of this talent level and potential this far back, I think bodes well. But you're definitely right. Like the top 15 guys, like we know they're going to be excellent. But the fact that there is such strong depth, Pete's is this far back in our countdown, I think ultimately bodes well and isn't a knock against these players.
We have a Tim. We haven't been overly abused for our ratings yet, have we?
No, up to this not point? Really. No, and this one's an interesting one because I texted you guys when I wrote the Dunham article, and I texted you guys over the weekend where we all ranked him, and I was joking with Priester that I cannot believe how low you've ranked Rodney Dunham, because Tim Priester had him 31, Mentock 30, O'Malley 30, Thomas 29, and Zwiller 29. You guys know how hard it is to rank 102 guys and all have one guy that close that's a freshman that hasn't played before. It's a total accident. We don't talk at all.
No, at all. No, at all. We don't discuss that at all. And, you know, frankly, I could see Rodney Dunham rising at the end of the season, rising quite a bit higher than number 30.
Related question from Trent McNear. Set me down a rabbit hole. Thanks a lot, Trent, for this one. Rodney Dunham comes in at 30 on the list as a true freshman. Who have been the highest rated true freshman in the years of the countdown? And how well do they perform as the season played out? I'm going to give you guys. Now, Priester, please remember. This countdown's been going on since, well, before we merged, but before 2015. But we didn't start doing the countdown aspect, the ranking of them, until 2019. It used to be A to Z, Irish A to Z. Then we realized we're a website that actually ranks high school players, so maybe we could rank college players too.
I think we were sitting in Crooked U in South Bend when we decided to rank them.
Let's rank
them. Great spot.
Why are we doing this alphabetically? Let's rank them and get people mad at us, including parents. All right. So you guys can start guessing pretty easily here. 2019, the highest ranked freshman was probably the best freshman that I'm going to say. Number 25, really good safety. He had a pretty good August training camp after we ranked him in April. Kyle Hamilton. So 25 is already higher than Rodney Dunham. This is where it gets interesting. 2020 was Tyree 31 and Mayer 36. Really interesting there is there's no spring for us to have watched anyone. And as it turns out, there was no August training camp, as Michael Mayer always points out. He goes, we just started preparing for the season as I got there. So those, I would say Mayer outperformed. Tyree was about, that's pretty good. He was Kyron Williams' sidekick. Forgot about this one. I never would have, I totally forgot about this because he had a good spring opportunity. Number 2021, Blake Fisher, we had at number 25, like Kyle Hamilton. He was going to start.
Early entry, and he clearly established himself as a starter in the spring.
Interesting one here. I want to give Priester some kudos at the end of it. 2022, I thought it would be Jaden Mickey because he had such a good spring. He was only 34. That's pretty good, higher than Mayer years before. Jadarian Price came in at 25 in our aggregate. Priester had Jadarian Price at 18. He ruptured the Achilles a couple months after we did
right. that. Right. And I knew how Dylan McCullough felt about him. And Jadarian Price blew me away the first time we interviewed him. Yeah. I mean, I was just so impressed with the person and him being a Notre Dame guy and a good fit and the maturity, you know, 18-year-old kid talking like a 28-year-old guy. Yeah. He proved to be pretty good.
2023, we got this right, I would think. It also wasn't that hard because the position was terrible. But Jaden Greathouse, 21. He led the team in touchdowns. I mean, that's pretty good. You lead the team in receiving touchdowns. You probably filled that out. 2024, and I think we probably got it accurate. KVA, Kingston Miliamuasa, at 26 again. We knew he had so many people in front of him. I think 26 was everybody almost reaching, right? Because he had Kaiser, Snead, Westbury, Bowen, but I think we got that one right. Last year was really low, and this is the same reason. Madden Ferramo was 48, and he got a little higher.
Well,
than that.
You know, I mean, the roster is so jam packed with talent and proven talent now that it's difficult for a freshman to come in and rank too high on this list. Regardless, you know, I mean, Dunham was a 5-star, and he's 30th on our list.
And to be fair, if you're talking about the actual best freshman, Benjamin Morrison was 69, Leonard Moore was 62, Joe Ault was 71. Those guys were the best freshmen, of course.
Yeah.
Biggest surprise.
All summer enrollees.
Yeah, those are, yeah, I mean, right, we're not right. really enrollees. And right. There was just, well, Joe Ault didn't matter. You would never think an offense
right.
was going to end up doing that. But fun exercise. I'm glad Trent McNair sent me down that rabbit hole. So really, 5 of the last 7 years, we've had a higher ranked freshman than Rodney Dunham. I did not expect to find that. Speaking of rankings, Tim Priester, we have not, because we had Thursday off, we have not gathered since your first-rate defensive line series, had Notre Dame number one, Miami number two. And now the controversy from this week for Tim O'Malley. Tim Priester ranks Notre Dame's linebackers number one and Miami number five. I just can't see it happening, Priester. I can't imagine that they...
You don't... What do you mean? You don't see
Notre Miami. Dame's number one. I think Miami's going to be better than five.
Well, that's fair. The issue that I dealt with was... The linebacker position is the best position on Notre Dame's schedule across the board. And then it's just, I certainly get it, Tim. Yeah. I had them higher at one point, but then then I'm looking at, I mean, BYU and SMU to me are 2 and 2A behind Notre Dame. And the two Wisconsin linebackers as true freshmen were outstanding last year. And Miami has Teray coming back. The guy that lit up Fernando Mendoza early in the national championship game. And he's really good, but he doesn't really have a running mate. So that's all that is that I just, there's just not enough proven talent there at linebacker for me to rate them ahead of BYU, SMU, and Wisconsin, who have established linebackers, although SMU lost some guys and then brought some in. But I get it. But I tell you what, I love watching film of great players. It doesn't matter whether they're Notre Dame recruits or otherwise. And I really enjoyed watching the linebackers across the board because you can go all the way down to Purdue. I think I had Purdue at, I don't know, number 10. Correa, their linebacker who's excellent, a real ball hawk and a big-time player. Love watching quality football. There's a ton of really good linebackers on Notre Dame's schedule. Most of them are on Notre Dame's team, but there's some other good ones too.
I think what really stood out to me too on the, I guess, defensive line is, I mean, for, I know we're all really high on Notre Dame's defensive line, but Miami still, they brought in Damon Wilson the second from Missouri. He was a second team all SEC guy, 9 sacks. As much as we all love Trevor's potential, I think he only had 6.5 last year. So I do think Miami, as much as they lost, they reloaded, but that's like the position group I think that won them the Notre Dame game, got them to the national championship game, and kept them competitive the whole way. So I think for Notre Dame to kind of be in that position going into the season. Now we'll see as that group kind of gels for Miami and they actually play on November 7th. But I think going into the season where you reasonably would say Notre Dame is ahead of them at that position group, I think is pretty significant.
Love the North Carolina defensive end, Melkart Abujade, really, really good. The best pass rusher among the 12 teams on Notre Dame's schedule. Stout, quick, but stout, can come from the inside, outside. Really like him. That's what prompted me to bump up North Carolina to where I did.
Pretty spirited conversation about the defensive line too on the board, because, you know, just recent years, you're not having Notre Dame number one of the defensive line in these situations. You're number one defensively at times, of course, and then I went back through that. But, you know, even the 2018 defensive line, you had them because you didn't know those guys were going to break out. Julian Aquara was an unknown. Khalid Kareem was an unknown. And Jerry Tillery was an enigma. So they weren't going into the year. They were probably the best defensive line of the regular season that Notre Dame played. And then, of course, they ran into Clemson, which made it the best. But people were wondering, like, that was only fourth out of the entire defensive line in 2018, yeah. Because you don't, those guys, you didn't know they were going to break out. And people can barely remember Jonathan Bonner was the fourth one.
Yeah. And, you know, Tim, your point about Miami's linebackers, they'll play higher than number five on this list because of the defensive line they have in front of them.
Yes. That's a really good point. I want to point out last year, number one defensive line, because it's relevant to Notre Dame right now, per Tim Priester, was Pittsburgh. And Notre Dame has their best defensive lineman on the football team right now, going into 2026 in Francis Brew. If you've ever thought I should really start a sportscast about my team, Zen AI makes it actually easy to do it. Zen AI is the home of vibe casting. You just have a real conversation, and it turns that into something worth sharing. Whether that's a sportscast, clips, or TikToks, no production skills are required. Your phone is the studio, so you can record from the couch, the bar, or walking out of the stadium and still get solid audio without the fancy gear. At the heart of Zen AI is an AI-assisted producer that cleans up your audio, finds the best moments, and creates share-ready clips you can tweak just by chatting in plain English. So vibecast live as the game unfolds, or jump on right after for instant reactions and analysis. Bring your own co-host, or find another fan in Zen AI's network, hit record, and you've got a draft of your sportcast ready by the final buzzer. Humans are the talent, AI is the infrastructure, vibes required, production optional. Zen AI is invite-only right now, and they're actually paying new vibecasters to create their first vibecast. So try it as a one-off, short, raw experiment. Go to zen.ai to join the waitlist, or hit the link in our show notes for a shot at early access. We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question from Huge NDMD17. Could moving Logan Thomas to linebacker be better long-term for him in Notre Dame, considering his size and the depth of position over the next 3 years?
I don't think so. I still think, I mean, Boubacar Traore will be gone. Who knows if Bryce Young breaks out? Maybe that's a thing for consideration. So I do think defensive end is still a place that could use that depth. And despite his size, we saw in the blue gold game, especially, I mean, Matty Augustine has been getting rave reviews all spring, but Logan Thomas has got the better of him on most pass rush reps in the blue goal game. I still think he has the potential. I think he just really needs to see that commitment, as I mentioned earlier, to the diet part of the performance and building himself up, because I think he has a talent. I think he has really long arms and a lot of speed, and I think he could bring a lot of value, especially on third down. But I don't think he necessarily needs to change position, because I think even though there may not be recruiting at linebacker the way they were a few years ago, I still think that position change may not suit him as well as it does defensive end, which I think if he can get the weight on, he could be a really productive player.
I think I understand the question. It's a legitimate question, because you're trying, you know, he's a good athlete, you know, he's a good football player, and you're trying to find a spot for him, but he was immediately a defensive end at Notre Dame. I mean, that's how they had him pegged. That's his skill set. So I don't think that you want to take him out of that comfort zone. Drew's right. I mean, look, if we get into the 5 for 5, he could have another year at Notre Dame in addition to the two that he has remaining. So I don't think linebacker is, I don't want to say it's not in his skill set, but it's not in his wheelhouse, whereas defensive end is. So you just need to hang with him, keep developing him. The whole key has always been, you know, keeping weight on. He's had difficulty doing that. But defensive end's his best position. You got to find a way to maximize him at that best spot.
And I think, like, Huge NDMD was thinking, you know, back in the day of 3-4 outside linebacker, Logan Thomas could be a linebacker at Notre Dame when he's playing the Prince Shembo, Shaq Williams role. But their defense isn't like that with nickel. You got to be pretty stout inside to play one of those two inside linebacker spots. I just think if Thomas is part of a package this year where they utilize his skills and it works out, he will be he will be a guy that stays 5 for 5. If he's not, he probably won't be a guy that stays 4, because this is the time for Logan Thomas to break out. I mean, they clearly trust him enough mentally, because he plays special teams. So staying healthy, had hamstring issues. And as Drew said, got to be able to keep that weight on nowadays because there's guys in front of you and behind you, one we just talked about in segment one, coming along to take your spot. Next question from Frick50. Everyone seems really curious about Quincy Porter, and rightfully so. From my vantage point, there is no single player whose unknown ceiling and floor can affect the outcome of Notre Dame's season more than him. Is that true for you guys? Is he the most potentially impactful wild card on this year's team?
I think that's a good call. I mean, that's a fair number one. I know I've got Quincy Porter on my list of counting down to do, and I'm scrambling a little bit because we didn't get to see him in the spring, so it's a little bit more difficult to evaluate him. We know he has great length and great potential coming out of high school. That's fair. I would throw out a couple other names. You know, I think DJ McKinney is a real wild card for Notre Dame on the defensive side. We've kind of heard a little bit some mixed reviews about what may be happening on the practice field this summer. Guys like Keon Keeley and Rodney Dunham are wild cards. Ian Premer at tight end. Jaden Sanders, if DJ McKinney is not the answer, maybe Jaden Sanders steps up because he did a really nice job of stepping up as a true freshman at Michigan. So, but Quincy Porter, with his size, his length, his upside, I think that's an excellent first choice.
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to the position he plays too. I think if Notre Dame could find a higher ceiling at the boundary for a receiver, that would really help this offense and give them more of a complete core. I think we really liked what we saw from FaZe on Mylan Graham, some other players, but that boundary, we didn't really see what we wanted from Micah Gilbert. So this spring, if Porter could step into that role and really stand, I think that would answer the biggest questions. I also want to, from another potential player we don't know much about yet, because we didn't see him, as Kerry Adams. I mean, he's also another five-star who was out this spring, but he's a potential to play. Now they don't need him as badly. They should have other answers at corner, but he has this high potential based on what we saw from him as a high school prospect as anyone, and we haven't seen him really on the practice field yet.
I'm going to cheat a little because we have seen him, but Charles Jagasa is my floor to ceiling X factor in this one, because Charles Jagasa playing for more than a half a year will be better than Quincy Porter at his position.
I promise you that.
No,
Tim, that's fair, but I'm done playing that speculation.
It's not
ripping on Jagasa. It's just that we go back and forth. I'm done speculating about those kind of things. A poor guy has gone through hell and back and is still trying to get right.
Yeah, and to circle back, 1 week ago with Pete and JB and I on, JB and I had both heard separately bad news about Jagasa, and JB brought it up. I, 4 hours later, got really good news about Jagasa. So we can put that on this podcast this time around.
Somebody's lying, Tim.
We will find out. This it would be pretty bad if this person's lying, but I got really good news on Jagasa 4 hours after that podcast. I was driving down US 31 to drop my son off, and I was like, oh, really?
Well, that's good. Lying is probably not the right word, just maybe misinterpreting where he is.
Our next question is from Memphis Phil. Who is this year's breakout senior, a la Jonas Gray, Asmar Bilal, Bilal, Javon McKinley, etc.?
Does Jalen Snead count as a breakout, or is he too good? He's better than those guys is the problem.
I think he counts.
Those guys weren't good at all going into their senior year. Jalen Snead.
Yeah, it's not an apples to apples comparison per se, but that's fair.
Yeah, he's my pick.
Well, first of all, I think we were talking about this before we hit record. It's a lot more difficult on a team of this quality and depth to be an Asmar Bilal. The competition is so great that you get, it's very difficult just to,
because you would have transferred 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, that's very true. Just to pop up and suddenly be better than everybody else is very difficult to do that because of their depth. So I don't know that there's an apples to apples comparison there. You know, I mean, Great House, if he can put it all together, that constitutes a big breakout season in his senior year or his senior year academically. Again, not making an exact comparison, but Cooper Flanagan stepping forward and having a big season as a
he's more 30 catch guy.
But I don't want to say that those days are gone. You know, the Jonas Grays and the Asmar Bilals and Javon McKinley's, it's just more difficult when Marcus Freeman continues to collect the quality talent, the great depth that they've accumulated.
Yeah, one more I think would be Luke Talich. We've seen him. He added a lot of size, up to like 15 pounds. I think he's now around 225. We know he's maybe, well, KVA's still out, going to fill in that kind of outside linebacker role, play on the edge, so do some coverage things. So I think while he's not going to be a starter, I think his is going to add more versatility and could break out in some ways and play a more meaningful role than he did in past years. And he's one who I know could have transferred. I know he had some pretty significant NIL opportunities to go elsewhere, and he chose to stay too. So I think he kind of fits that. Not a lot of guys would necessarily stay in that position, but he's a guy who, you know, believed in Notre Dame, walked onto the team, believes in the degree and all that stuff. So I think he is the type of player that could do this, even if he's not, I mean, he's not necessarily going to start over Tay Johnson or Adon Shuler, to be clear, but he can add a lot of value to this really good defense.
We have a question from CMU Pens fan. Which game on the Notre Dame schedule before BYU, BYU is game number 7, will give you the best read as to whether Notre Dame is living up to its potential or not in 2026?
I'm going with Wisconsin. I'm going the old Pete Sampson route. We used to, Tim, I think you and I talked about this with Pete the first time, maybe in 2019. The Notre Dame's first game generally lets you know how they're going to look most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time. I think that maybe that was after Texas in 2016 is why we said that. But it was in that range where you could look at Notre Dame and be like, it's not what we thought they're going to have. I think Wisconsin, if Notre Dame comes out and just absolutely handles Wisconsin the way I think they will and the way they're favored to do so, they're also the best team prior to BYU that Notre Dame will face. You got to kill some of the other ones.
Yeah, I think Wisconsin's probably the right answer. I also think North Carolina, it's kind of a little bit, it's on the road a little bit before you get into the mid-year schedule. There's less connections there, I guess. Like Wisconsin, you have obviously the Mike Tressel's, Jim Tressel's nephew is on the team. You have the other coaching connections. Same with Michigan State, you're going against Max Bull. So there's maybe some other reasons to get up, but North Carolina may not be as good as those teams, but just getting into the heart of that schedule and showing you can kind of put your foot down and really demolish an inferior opponent like they did down the stretch last year before going into the toughest games of the season, I think would bode well for what we're going to see in October or the rest of October and November.
I definitely believe Wisconsin's the best of the first six teams in Notre Dame plays. They just happen to be first. So, and I don't, you know, do you want to play Wisconsin in game one or when they've had a few games to get accustomed to one another? Because there's a lot of transition going on there. But yeah, we've talked about Colton Joseph, their quarterback, like him a lot. Defense is their forte. I think that they're strong. They're pretty strong defensively. So they're the best team. I think you could make an argument for North Carolina having the best overall defense, maybe. Pass rush, certainly. Abujaze, the defensive end, I mentioned him. He's top notch. I look at Michigan State. How quickly can Pat Fitzgerald begin to turn things around? You look at a lot of the preseason commentary magazines and stuff. They don't think he's going to be able to do that the first year, so he's lacking some talent. But I have talked about running back Cam Edwards, the transfer in there, who I think is going to be really good for them. So those are some of the teams. But I don't think there's any doubt after having spent the last month, you know, really studying the opponents, that Wisconsin is the best of those first six teams that Notre Dame plays.
Our next question is from 618 Irish, and I did omit one aspect of his question so we wouldn't quibble over it. How would you rate Notre Dame's position groups nationally? He had top 2, top 5, top 12, which is playoff level, and top 25, or you could throw in other if they're worse. Let's not worry about top 2 because that's trying to nitpick with absolutely everything, but top 5 basically gets you by. So I'm going to run down the position groups, and we're going to start with the easy one. Drew, you go ahead. Defensive back.
I cheated and wrote down number 1.
Okay, yeah. All right, so we're in agreement, right?
So top 5, definitely top 5.
Definitely top 5. Okay. Defensive line.
I wrote playoff level.
That's second level, top 12. That's where I would place the defensive line. Yeah, could be better. We love the depth. There's no doubt. Could be better, but that's where I would place them right now.
Also, other
I think they could be players. top 5 in November.
Yes, that's a good call. This is the time where you point out of the year other teams have players too, especially the teams that aren't on Notre Dame's schedule. A linebacker. That was a joke, by the way.
Top five
as well. That's why I didn't want to get into top 2. We don't know if they're the top 2. We think they're top 5, though. That's where you kind of
doesn't really matter.
Yeah. A wide receiver. Sorry, I skipped ahead because this is a tough one.
For now, I'd place them in a top 25.
Exactly where I put them.
Yeah, I agree. I think if they can figure out that boundary receiver, then playoff level potential, but they have an obvious kind of hole.
I like to separate wide receiver and tight end, so I did. Tight end.
I have them in the same category because of we're hearing a lot of positive things about Premier, a healthy Cooper Flanagan, a redshirt freshman, James Flanagan.
He is a low-key third string X factor that will play if he's because he can play. Yeah. He can play three tight ends at some point.
Yeah. I doubt there are 25 teams that have a better trio than that.
Right. Yeah. That's a good call for top 25.
Yeah. I think top 25 is the answer. I think for what Notre Dame needs them to do in the run game, they could be borderline playoff level. I think they'll be better in short yardage because of Cooper Flanagan being back this year. But I think if you're just looking at overall playoff or top 25.
I skipped an obvious one. Offensive line. I bet we have our first. Do you think we have our first disagreement here? Offensive line.
Playoff level.
That's what I said. I conservatively put them playoff level. Yeah. You've got to develop some chemistry with some movement there. Yeah, that's where I'd place them. Where do you have them, Tim?
I have playoff level, but of the groups we said could move up, I actually have them more so than the defensive line moving in the top five. The offensive line, playoff level. And we mentioned a lot of these groups we put playoff level could become top five. I think the offensive line has a better chance of being a top five unit nationally than the defensive line even.
I agree. I think they're top five talent level. Like just if you're looking at pure talent and potential, I agree.
I don't know how to do this one. Quarterback, top two, right? That's what we can use the top two. Quarterback is top two.
Yes.
For my question for you guys, though, since we agree on that, do you think there are 25 better backup quarterback situations? And I'm not asking like you know it. I'm wondering, do you think there's 25 better backup quarterback situations? I'm sure there's 10 to 12 better backup quarterback situations.
I'm sure there are 25 teams that have somebody other than a freshman as the backup.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. So, yeah, you're right. So that could be other in the backups then, right?
Yeah.
That's a tough – that's still you still got to kind of wait the starter a little bit more than everything else there. Running back.
Top 25.
That's where I would place them. But I like you, Tim, I am, and I think you are too, Drew. I think Aeneas Williams is going to have a very successful, determined quality 2026 football season.
I think he could be a top 12 running back heading into the playoffs. Naturally, I mean, that makes it pretty obvious. There'll be 12 teams in the playoffs, but I think he'll be a top 12 level running back. But it's not fair to old Notre Dame teams to say this is the whole level, be top 12 playoff level. We don't know anything about Nolan James and Kedron Young and Javion Osborne and Jonas Walton. Sorry, Javion Osborne. So I would go top 25 as well. And this is a good one. Special teams. We kind of just got to go kicker, punter, and return at this point. We're not going to know. I think the coverage will be great.
I said playoff level because of the other things they do. They're still going to find ways to screw with other teams and block kicks and put them under pressure and things like that. So and then obviously getting Porath in is a huge boon for that unit.
I mean, Marty Biagi is a playoff special teams coach. So that's where I would place them. Could they rise higher than that?
Yeah,
they could. Cause if Porath continues the 88% success and Scaife does what we think he can. And then they come up with, you know, Biagi designed something to come up with in the return game and the block game. Certainly they could rise above that.
And I think to be fair, they did lose a guy that returned two kickoffs for touchdowns against USC in Jadarian Price in his career. And that's a pretty valuable, those are pretty important touchdowns. They don't play USC this year, Priester, because USC didn't want to play Notre Dame.
That's correct.
They keep losing games. So that was a problem.
Our next question is from C. Frazier. Which prior Notre Dame players would have benefited the most from the 5-for-5 rule? I would go with Romeo Okwara.
Good question.
I agree with C. Frazier. That's a good call by him.
Romeo. Yeah, really, really good question. Got me to thinking, and I don't know that I worked out all the math with the. Right. I mean, but guys that came to mind for me, like Ade Ogundeji, who ended up being a third round draft pick, maybe a little bit later. Fourth, yeah. I mean, that's a guy that came to mind. Equanimeous St. Brown, another year of strength and development. I don't know. Kevin Austin, how many years was he there?
He was there four.
He was there four. Yes. He would have been a prime. Yeah, he would have been a really prime candidate. I also thought about Chris Brown out of the shadow of Will Fuller.
Oh,
yeah. I think St. Brown might have left after his junior year, too, when he
did. Yeah. He should have. So he should have stayed a senior.
Yeah, he should have. I think it's a little bit of recency bias, and he was still a third round draft pick, so it's worked out for him. But Eli Raerdon having another year after those injuries, and really, I know he didn't score a touchdown last year, so I think giving him one more year of development as the guy at Notre Dame, especially in the passing game, and just kind of continues development. But obviously we saw at the combine how big of a great of an athlete he is, which really helped him, I think, in the draft process. But I think he could have used another year of production, and given his family ties and stuff, I think he's probably a guy who would have taken advantage of that too if it had been an option.
Because he's a podcast favorite and almost made his 10 years in the NFL, Isaac Rochelle would have been really good to bring back to one of the Notre Dame, because that poor guy had to play on a bad Notre Dame team to end his career, and he could have come back, been a higher pick. But Romeo Okwara is a great call because he started off as a 17-year-old at Notre Dame, and they blew a year of eligibility with him trotting down the field on special teams coverage and not doing a very good job of it.
Like, wasn't he 16?
That was a bad use of.
Was he the one that was 16 when he actually enrolled?
He might have been 16 when he enrolled. That's I mean, Romeo Okwara is just a perfect example. That's insane.
Yeah.
But Isaac Rochelle is the guy that he would be good at too on a fifth year.
Yeah, Okwara made $30 million in the NFL after being an undrafted free agent too. So just even boosting his draft stock a little bit would have probably benefited him a lot. And I mean, I know he's really productive, but I think one more year could have been huge for him.
I'm actually trying to remember when Sheldon Day was drafted. What round did Sheldon Day go in? Because he would have been an absolute dominant force coming back with Isaac Rochelle. They both had to leave.
You know, I think it was third or fourth
is what I would say.
That's probably still going pro at that point when you're.
Yeah.
But those, it's a great question. I kind of stuck on the defensive linemen because Notre Dame developed good defensive linemen that were not great recruits. Sheldon Day was a good recruit, but Isaac Rochelle, just a quality player that probably could have been great on his last team.
We have a question from Franken Cow. Can the 5-for-5 rule negatively impact someone? Thinking someone like Charles Jagusa might lose the medical redshirt.
In the future, yes, but not the guys that are playing football this year. As Drew pointed out, and I have the NCAA's wording, you can actually choose for the 2026 guys old school rules or the new school rules. So Charles Jagusa applies to this. For currently enrolled underclassmen and incoming 26 recruits, schools have the flexibility to apply either the old eligibility model or the new age-based framework, depending on which is most beneficial to the athlete. Shockingly, the NCAA is going what's beneficial to the athlete on yet another thing. Things are changing, guys. The full mandatory transition to new age-based model will affect all classes enrolling in 2027 and later. So,
funny how you lose a bunch of lawsuits and you start changing how you do things a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, yeah, because Jagusa would be the number one guy to be screwed over by this because he is a clear-cut choice. I mean, I don't think he will do this, but he is a clear-cut of he could play 6 years with the multiple injuries.
Yeah. So. But the trade-off is, you know, I mean, the 6 year we are.
You got to get
lost. I don't know if it was D-line or linebackers. Notre Dame's playing against, is Toure? They're playing against a seventh-year linebacker or eighth-year D-lineman somewhere along there. The names are kind of running together for me. But yeah, that's just drawing the line. You'd like for the sake of Charles Jagusa to have the opportunity to play college football before he attempts to make the jump to the NFL. But look, there's going to be some collateral damage in that, and he may be one of them.
Well, he won't be, but guys will be in the future. But you got to quit. We can't have 17-year-old Romeo Okwara getting blocked by 24-year-old guy from IU for the championship, Tim Priester, as we pointed out right there. That's just not how it works. Next question. Chubbs McGee. It's dedicated to Drew Mentock, apparently. Jordan Faison just received first-round mock draft grade weeks after Drew Mentock used that as his bold Irish Illustrated Insider podcast prediction. Coincidence? I think not. But seriously, first round, please explain how. I guess you better go first.
Yeah. To clarify, I think it was Mike Renner from CBS Sports, who is also a Notre Dame grad, I believe, who did that mock draft. But I think you're betting, at least from my perspective, a lot on his potential. I mean, he came in as a freshman, had not played receiver, was a quarterback in high school. Notre Dame just taught him to run one or two routes. He ended up scoring a touchdown in his first game. He's been playing lacrosse up until now. I think you see all the potential, even though that's not been his fully dedicated thing. He's been learning the position since he got on campus. So I think you're just counting on that upward trajectory for a guy who still led Notre Dame receiving yards last year. He does a lot after the catch, which is definitely something they value in the NFL, I think a lot of it would come down to how fast is he really and how productive is this season. But if he's pushing 1,000 yards and then runs a, I don't know, a low 4.4 at the NFL Combine, it's not out of the question, because he's shown it over his years, other than as a sophomore when he dealt with the lower body injuries, that he's productive, stays in the field. He's a really tough guy. I think if you're going to be an under 6 foot receiver, you've got to have that edge to you. And I think we've all seen, especially in practices, that he's the first guy to make a catch and get in a guy's face. So I think for a guy like that, that's an impactful thing. And I'm not saying he will be a first round pick, but I don't think it's outlandish. Maybe it's outlandish to project it right now, but I see him getting there as a possibility.
The cool, what I like about Jordan Faison is that he's overachieved every step of the way that we've seen him. I mean, here he is a walk-on, and he's making a massive impact. We're at school field in South Bend. And watching him practice, and like he's the guy, him and Jason Onye, who was very animated that day. Those are the guys that come to mind when I think about that practice, that practice session. And Faison's always overachieved. Now, Drew, you're right. He was banged up, and that hurt him, you know, after the catch a couple years ago, but he's gotten a lot stronger. He improved that aspect of his game tremendously last year. So I don't know that. I mean, I haven't thought at all in terms of first round draft choice, but he's a guy that certainly can rise. And again, he's overachieved every time with each passing year. I think he's overachieved based upon our expectations for him going into it.
I love Jordan Faison, but I think he's just going to overachieve in the NFL as a fourth round draft pick. And that's just how I look at it. I can't imagine. But I think he'll succeed in the NFL. He'll be a viable, he'll be a good slot receiver, because he'll move back to the slot, and he'll be a great special teamer, and he'll be a great guy to have on your team, and he could be Notre Dame's offensive MVP, not named CJ Carr this year. But Tim Priester, you just sent me down memory lane. Remember what Jason Onye was saying at that? We could hear him from the stands.
I don't remember exactly. I know he was very animated that day.
I don't know if he was in the fight or someone was in a fight with Blake Fisher. And when they were walking away, he kept walking after him going, "Blake Fisher's mad. Blake Fisher's mad." Like teasing Blake Fisher. I was like, wow. So that's the first time we knew Onye was a pretty funny guy too. But yeah, that's when we also used to sit at school field 20 feet away and watch a full practice. I'm not sure that'll happen again. You know who they opened with that year? Navy. They got open with a bad team for that to happen again, I think. All right, our next question. Got a little bit of a two-parter here, and we're veering away from the football field from Shibe43. This first part's football. In the spirit of FIFA overturning a red card suspension, what penalty or suspension could FIFA, quote-unquote, lift in Notre Dame's past to change a program trajectory from that point?
That's on you, Drew.
Great question.
So I don't know if this is entirely in the spirit of the question, but I think if you could lift Kevin Stefferson's suspensions, and more so you're making him someone who didn't do those type of things to get suspended. Cause in this instance, it was a player who was not right that he was suspended. And that's not the case with Kevin Stefferson. But if you look at what he did as a freshman, I think he had over 400 yards receiving. You add him to that 2017 team, and more importantly, 2018 as a junior with that receiving core. I think that could have really helped Notre Dame and himself as well. But he was, again, justifiably suspended. But if you could change that off the field antics, that would have been a big boon.
Kevin Stefferson is the first guy that I wrote down. I think back to Michael Stonebreaker and hitting parked cars late in night or early morning.
Yeah, that was bad. But they might have gone back to back with him out there, really. I mean, I don't know. They might not. He would have had to play a different offensive position to beat Miami that night. But yeah, that's a tough one. Along that line, and Shibe43 put this in as an example too, I agree with him. The rocket clip in Colorado.
I'd like to. Oh, I wasn't really thinking
of that yellow flag and give it back to the ref. Whoever overserved Notre Dame's 1993 football team in between the Florida State and Boston College game, I could go back and give that guy a card instead, because that's unfortunate. But really, whatever happened to Bobby Taylor's ankle that day, I would like to go in and magically heal it, because then they would not have beaten Notre Dame. But I think the rocket example that Shibe used, I hid from you guys, is a great one. That's if you could overturn something, that would change the trajectory of that. And final question. Kay Beasley, he wanted to know if Samson was on the pod. He is not, but I got Pete's prediction. Kay Beasley, any predictions from the crew or Samson on the U.S.-Belgium match? Pete was brief. He did not give me a breakdown. He said 2-1 U.S. So, sorry, Kay Beasley, no breakdown.
Go ahead, Drew.
I mean, I'm going to say something positive about the U.S. team and predict they win today after maybe what I've said in the past. But I think they are favored, I believe, in this game, too, which I was a little surprised because Belgium, I believe, is top 10 in FIFA rankings. But I think they have a lot of momentum and it's on U.S. soil. That didn't work out for Mexico last night against England. But I don't think Belgium is quite that level of team. And the U.S. is going to get it done tonight.
Well, I thought without Bellingham, I thought the U.S. still had a chance. I do that frequently. I thought they still, I don't know that Belgium's playing its best football right now, its best soccer right now. So I thought that the U.S. could win that game. But reinserting Bellingham into the equation, which is going to be controversial, win or lose, whatever happens. If they lose, there will be a narrative on why they did, because he was included in the equation, what have you. But I do think, I think up to this point, I think the U.S. has played better soccer than Belgium has, and I'll pick them by a goal.
I want to give you guys my thought process from last night watching soccer, because I did not grow up playing soccer, but I have watched more soccer in the last month than I have in my entire life in the aggregate. And I've watched almost every match late night, anything I can watch. I've enjoyed the whole World Cup. And I found myself sitting there after a month of marveling at their abilities, because I never played soccer, so I'm always amazed by everything they do, and saying stupid things like, you got to get a better touch there, don't you? Like, I could possibly know what's going on when that guy has to get a better touch when the ball's kicked 100 feet past me and you run and dive and you barely make touch it with your toe. And then I remember that people do that for football, basketball, and baseball all the time, and that's why I get mad at them.
Yeah, it's competitive athletics, Tim. There's a carryover.
But it's like when someone's like, well, you got to make that shot. Do you really? Like when LeBron's all over you, you have to make that shot. You can say that as a guy that played in high school. Like, come on, man. So I'm watching this, never played in my life. I'm like, you got to make a better touch there. And I just caught myself thinking, I don't know. So with that, I don't know who's going to win, but I'll be rooting for the U.S. match.
I'm with you. I have a lot of thoughts on offside rules that I have no justification to have them and no experience to know what it'd actually be like if they made my changes. But I feel very strongly that they should address those.
And millions of Americans that have suddenly become expert. I include myself in the group that really doesn't know, but I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I can't get enough of it. I think it's been spectacular. The appreciation for the level of athleticism and physicality and effort and I heard like people have complained about the flops. Well, watch the NBA for crying out loud. Don't give me that crap about flops. It happens in other sports too, and it happens in this one. And that's kind of a stain on it. But and that one official in the middle of the field getting attacked by five players from each team. At once, it's pretty wild.
Sometimes the officials are great. They're just like, no.
Exactly.
And they actually get listened to every once in a while, too. Yeah,
really looking forward to tonight's game.
The only thing I'll add, too, is I know Bosnia-Herzegovina is, I think they're ranked in like the 60s, so they weren't the best team, but USA overcoming that red card and persevering through that. I know that bit Italy, and that's why they're not in this World Cup. So I think dealing with that kind of pressure and persevering through a bad call and not letting it get to you. I think those are the type of things that in the past, when I've watched U.S. soccer a little bit, I wouldn't have necessarily seen. So I think that's a good sign going into this game, too.
Well, for Tim Priester and Drew Mentok, who both picked Notre Dame to beat Belgium tonight, I am Tim O'Malley. That was a lot of fun, guys. I will just be watching and judging people and their failures in Olympic sport, in soccer, because I feel like I'm an expert now, just like everybody else that watches Notre Dame football. For Priester, Mentok, and O'Malley, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider. Thanks for watching and listening.